I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's August 25th, and we have a lot to talk about. But before we do, I want to take just a minute to let you know how much I appreciate your choosing to be a part of the Real Talk MS listener community. I love that every week I continue to hear from more and more of you, sharing your feedback and suggestions for future podcast episodes. And those of you who've reached out and contacted me can attest to the fact that I always reply to your emails and DMs. I'm glad that you're getting a good return on the time that you invest in listening to Real Talk MS. And I love to see the podcast growing, not just across North America, but everywhere. MS doesn't respect any boundaries. And I always try to make sure that every podcast episode offers information that you can use no matter where you might be listening from. So I was especially gratified last week when I learned that Real Talk MS is ranked the number 73 podcast in its Apple Podcasts category in the United Kingdom. I also discovered that we're number 58 in the United Arab Emirates, number 92 in Norway, number 95 in Spain, number 101 in Saudi Arabia, and number 116 in New Zealand. I think these global rankings are remarkable, especially when you consider that there are more than 500,000 active podcasts to choose from on Apple Podcasts. So once again, thank you. I try to do all that I can every week to ensure that the time you spend listening to Real Talk MS is going to be time well spent. Whether you call it brain fog, cog fog, or you don't happen to have a name for it, cognitive dysfunction affects more than half of all the people with MS. We don't always talk about it, maybe because the first time that you experience memory loss or have difficulty making a decision or concentrating, or maybe you experience unexpected difficulty trying to drive to a destination that you've been to hundreds of times. Well, those moments can be scary. And I think it's human nature to sort of tuck those scary moments away. But like any other MS symptom, ignoring cognitive issues doesn't make them better. The good news is that there are steps that you can take to better maintain your focus, memory, and concentration. And joining me today to help us better understand the cognitive issues associated with MS is Dr. Megan Beyer. Dr. Beyer is a rehabilitation neuropsychologist and an assistant professor of physical medicine at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Dr. Beyer specializes in cognitive rehabilitation and neuropsychological assessment and intervention. And if you're a regular Real Talk MS listener, you may be experiencing a sense of deja vu, and it's with good reason. Dr. Beyer actually joined me just a couple of weeks ago to talk about depression and cognition, and after that episode, I received so many questions from you about cognitive issues that Dr. Beyer has been gracious enough to join me again to answer more of our questions about cognitive dysfunction in MS. But before we get to my conversation with Dr. Megan Beyer, there are a few other things that you should know about. This past week, the FDA gave its approval to ofatumumab as a treatment for relapsing-remitting MS and active secondary progressive MS. Ofatumumab is the first B-cell therapy that does not require an infusion. Instead, it's administered once a month at home by means of an auto-injection pen. And given the fact that we're in the midst of a massive public health crisis, being able to get treatment with a high-efficacy disease-modifying therapy that targets the B-cells in your immune system from the comfort and safety of your own home is probably going to strike a very positive note with a lot of people. A couple of weeks ago, when we talked about the encouraging phase 3 clinical trial results for ofatumumab, I referred to it as Arzerra. Now that it's been approved by the FDA, the drug is going to be marketed as an MS treatment under the name Kesimpta. So I wanted to explain that ofatumumab actually received FDA approval as a treatment for certain blood cancers in 2009. The commercial or trade name for ofatumumab as a leukemia treatment has been and still is Arzerra. Kesimpta is the same drug, with a different dosage, a different method of administering the drug, and I might add, a completely different 10-year clinical trial process that earned ofatumumab its FDA approval as an MS disease-modifying therapy. You can expect Kesimpta to be available as soon as September. And for our listeners throughout Europe, EMA approval of Kesimpta is expected by mid-2021. A couple of weeks ago, Dr. John Ciotti joined me on the podcast to talk about vaccinations and MS. And one of the things we talked about were the considerations that people using Ocrevus might want to make when scheduling their vaccinations and their infusions. Now, a case study in Italy has shown that Ocrevus eliminated the immunity that was acquired through vaccination to the varicella zoster virus, the virus that causes chickenpox and shingles. This single case involved a 48-year-old man with relapsing remitting MS who had received his first Ocrevus infusion 4 months after receiving his varicella zoster vaccination to prevent against chickenpox. Well, after 5 months, this patient was screened again, and the results of his blood tests showed that he no longer had the protective anti-varicella zoster antibodies in his system. So he was given another vaccination. And 8 weeks later, there were still no antibodies. There was no immunity from that second vaccination. It's also worth pointing out that this particular patient had several comorbidities or other health conditions unrelated to MS, including type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, abnormal levels of blood fats, and coronary artery disease. While Ocrevus depletes the B cells in the immune system, it's been shown to preserve the ability for the body to generate new B cells, as well as maintain pre-existing immunity from previous infections and vaccinations. But it's also been reported that some patients who have received flu shots or pneumonia vaccinations have lost the immunity gained from those vaccinations after receiving an Ocrevus infusion. So clearly, there's good reason for the research community to consider larger studies to better understand how many patients and how often patients being treated with Ocrevus may actually lose the immunity that they gain through vaccinations. In the meantime, the authors of this case study recommend that as a precaution, patients being treated with Ocrevus be tested for varicella zoster antibodies after their Ocrevus treatments. If you'd like to review this case study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. There's more news about disease-modifying therapies, as pharmaceutical company Mylan prevailed in court against their pharmaceutical competitor Biogen, and now plans to introduce a generic for Tecfidera next month. This will be the very first generic oral disease-modifying therapy, and as Biogen has earned almost $3.8 billion in annual sales of Tecfidera just in the United States, you can probably understand why Biogen went to court to try to stop a lower-cost generic from being made available. You might remember that in 2017, Mylan produced the first generic for Copaxone. So we'll keep you updated in the coming weeks as this lower-priced generic for Tecfidera becomes available. If you're someone who's affected by MS and you happen to live in the United States, I'm pretty confident that you don't need to be reminded of the incredibly high cost of MS prescription medications. And one of the things that pharmaceutical companies do to make their drugs more affordable to more people is they offer patient assistance programs that provide some measure of financial relief to patients who otherwise can't afford their disease-modifying therapies. Now, one other thing that I'd like you to keep in mind for the next couple of minutes is that close to a third of the people with MS are enrolled in Medicare. And here's where things start to get complicated, because if you're enrolled in Medicare, you're actually prohibited by law from receiving financial assistance through these patient assistance programs. And that brings us to the hot water that Teva, the pharmaceutical company that manufactures Copaxone, finds itself in. Between 2007 and 2015, Teva increased the price of Copaxone from $17,000 a year to more than $73,000 a year. And according to the U.S. Justice Department, in an effort to make it easier for people to stay on Copaxone and not wander off to one of their competitors' drugs, to keep Copaxone more affordable, Teva funneled $300 million to two charitable foundations who in turn reimbursed patients to protect them from the increasingly higher and higher prices being charged for their medication. According to the Justice Department, when these payments included payments to patients enrolled in Medicare, they amounted to illegal kickbacks designed to keep patients in government-sponsored health plans like Medicare on higher-priced medications than they otherwise might not select for themselves. So the Justice Department is taking Teva to court, claiming that their activities amounted to defrauding Medicare. Meanwhile, Teva claims that the government's lawsuit will further restrict patients' access to important medicines and healthcare. Just a few months ago, Teva agreed to pay $54 million to settle claims that it bribed doctors to prescribe Copaxone and another drug used to treat Parkinson's disease by paying them thousands of dollars in speaker fees for speeches that were never given. And because of a confluence of bad news and declining sales, some market watchers say that this Justice Department lawsuit poses a serious threat to Teva's financial viability as a company, and we'll keep you updated as both sides in this lawsuit take their next steps. Being Black and living with MS brings unique challenges and experiences, from scientific and clinical differences in the disease itself to coming face to face with the stark inequities that exist in our healthcare system. So the National MS Society is hosting the Black MS Experience Summit, an interactive 3-day virtual event that will take place September 22nd through the 24th. The summit will be an opportunity to connect with others who understand the distinct experience of living with MS as a Black person. Summit participants will not only forge powerful connections, they'll also learn from leading scientific and healthcare experts while giving voice to the Black MS community. If you or your family is affected by MS in the African American community, you'll find a link to more information and no-cost registration in today's show notes. No one ever said, "I sure love getting an MRI exam." And one of the reasons that people living with MS don't get too excited at the thought of that annual ritual is the time that it takes for each scan. That time where you can't even move, or the process has to start all over again if your doctor's going to end up with high-quality images. Now, the radiology community has spent decades looking for ways to speed up an MRI scan without losing the important imaging detail. And researchers at Facebook, yes, you heard that right, and New York University have developed an artificial intelligence algorithm that early testing has shown can produce an MRI scan 4 times faster without any loss of diagnostic accuracy. The initial testing in this project was focused on MRI scans to detect damage and injury to the human knee. Once the algorithm is thoroughly trained on one part of the human anatomy, the research team believes that future training on other parts of the body will increase the speed of the scans even further. You may not know it, but Facebook has a highly skilled team of artificial intelligence experts. They use that technology to automatically tag your friends when you upload a photo. And obviously, it can be put to a use that may be less entertaining, but much more helpful to the millions of people who go through the process of getting an MRI exam. There's lots more testing to be done, but this breakthrough technology has the potential to be a game changer in hospitals and imaging centers everywhere. We'll keep you posted as this work continues. A couple of weeks ago, my guest on the podcast was Dr. Megan Beyer, a rehabilitation neuropsychologist at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. And one of the topics that we discussed was cognitive dysfunction in MS. Well, many of you told me that you wanted to hear more about this subject. So in a moment, I'll be joined by my guest, Dr. Megan Beyer, and we'll take a deeper dive into cognitive problems in MS. Joining me today to help us better understand the cognitive issues associated with MS is rehabilitation neuropsychologist and assistant professor of physical medicine at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, Dr. Megan Beyer. And if you're a regular Real Talk MS listener, you may be experiencing a sense of deja vu, and with good reason. Dr. Beyer joined me just a couple of weeks ago to talk about depression and cognition, and after that episode, I received so many questions from you about cognitive issues. Well, I'm very glad that Dr. Beyer can join us again so that we can take a deeper dive into cognitive dysfunction in MS. Welcome back to the podcast, Dr. Beyer.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Well, to get our conversation started, can you explain how cognitive issues typically present themselves in MS?
Sure, absolutely. So some of the most common symptoms that occur in people living with multiple sclerosis are things like slowed brain speed, which means that it might take longer to do everyday tasks like writing an email, getting easily distracted, meaning that you maybe can't watch TV and talk to somebody at the same time, having word finding problems like the tip of the tongue type of phenomenon where the words are there or the concept is there, but you just can't get them out or can't get them out quickly enough. Difficulty learning new information. So you might have to reread things multiple times before it sticks. Difficulty with things like planning and organization. Like it might take you longer or more effort to do something like cooking with a complex recipe. And sometimes things like visual spatial difficulties, which are kind of knowing where your body is in space or sort of seeing things visually, like packing the trunk of a car or putting something together from a place like IKEA.
From those examples you just shared, it sounds to me like cognitive symptoms can really get in the way of just everyday life.
Absolutely. Yeah, there is a really big impact on with cognition on what we call health-related quality of life or just quality of life in general. So it has an impact on people's relationships. It has an impact on employment and, just everyday functioning. So it is truly a symptom that I think is not only important but something that should receive a lot of attention and also intervention so that people don't have such an impact on their everyday life.
Do other MS symptoms have an impact on cognition, on the cognitive challenges someone might face?
Oh, absolutely. So fatigue is the biggest one that I think of. So the majority of people with MS experience significant fatigue, and fatigue has a big impact on cognition. So some people describe feeling sharper in the morning, and then their cognition seems to get foggier or it seems less clear in the afternoon. Also things like depression, so we talked about mood issues previously, but it's something that truly it has a strong impact. So depression can have an impact on things like memory and problem solving. Things like anxiety can have an impact on things like attention or being able to do more than one thing at a time or getting easily distracted. So there certainly are a number of MS symptoms that can have an impact on cognition.
Will someone experience cognitive dysfunction only during an MS relapse or flare? And I guess this is kind of a two-part question. The second part is cognitive dysfunction progressive even for someone who may be living with relapsing remitting MS?
So the answer to that, the first part of your question is No, people don't just experience it during an exacerbation. But the caveat is that we are finding that there can be things that are called cognitive exacerbations. So you might experience a new onset of cognitive difficulties that are over and above anything that you've experienced before and have a significant change or impact in your functioning. And if those symptoms stick around for 24 to 48 hours or more, I certainly recommend talking to your medical provider. So there was a study that tracked people's cognition over the course of, 6 months, and they found that there were people who were having these cognitive exacerbations without any other physical symptoms. So we certainly want to pay attention to those because they can have an impact. But it's not just something that you experience during an exacerbation. So similar to other MS symptoms, there may be pieces of cognitive difficulty that stick around in between exacerbations. And there is some indication that there can be progression over time. However, it's not the same for everyone. So just like with most symptoms with MS, it's very variable between person. People who have cognitive symptoms at the time of their diagnosis do have a bit of a higher risk of progression over time, but it's not usually a fast progression. It's usually something that's sort of slow and something that occurs over the course of, 5, 10, even longer years. But certainly there are also people who even, have cognitive symptoms and maybe don't progress or progress even slower than what our tests can pick up on. So I've certainly seen a number of people who have been tested 15 years ago and their testing is the same as it was 15 years ago. So again, just like every other MS symptom, unfortunately, it's very variable. So it's a little hard to predict.
When someone visits their neurologist for their 6 month or annual follow-up appointment, their neurologist may be very interested in ordering or reviewing a new MRI, and they may be very interested in having that person complete a 25-foot walk during that office visit. But should patients expect their neurologist to also ask about the status of their cognitive well-being?
Yes, absolutely. So there was a group of us, I was part of a group that was put together by several MS organizations that put together guidelines for cognition in MS. And the current national guidelines are that every person with MS should have at least cognitive screening once per year and objective screening. So you kind of mentioned sort of ask about cognition. But the problem with asking about cognition is that it's not always a good indicator of whether or not cognitive functioning has changed for a variety of reasons. So it's really important, just like getting the MRI or doing the 25-foot walk, to have an objective marker that we can track over time. So if you're not getting yearly screening, then certainly it's something that you should ask your doctor about.
Since you mentioned that cognitive screening, can you explain the difference between cognitive screening and cognitive assessment?
Sure, absolutely. So cognitive screening, really what we're doing is we're kind of trying to cast the net wide so that we can potentially pick up on anybody who might be having difficulty. So that might mean a false positive, meaning it's maybe overly sensitive. But the reason is that we really want to refer people who get that positive screen to more in-depth testing and make sure that there's nothing going on, or if there is, that we can do something about it. So that screening might be something as short as a 90-second speed test, or there's a few different clinics now that are using iPad apps or computerized programs. And there's certainly some neurologists who are using questions like giving you three words and then having you repeat them back after a delay, and along with some other questions. And those are all types of screens that you can get, and they're trying to pick up any cognitive problems that might be out there. An assessment is something that's much more in-depth, and it often takes several hours. You're going to be asked about your background history, your medical history, medications that you're on, things like fatigue and sleep and mood symptoms and all these other things that could be impacting cognition. and also do cognitive testing. So that appointment, like I said, is several hours long because it's very in-depth and we're really trying to get at what's going on and what are the primary drivers of any cognitive change so that we have a clear picture of how to target and improve those areas.
Is that cognitive assessment that you just described, is that something that's typically covered by most health insurance?
Yeah, so most insurances will cover a neuropsychological assessment. There are some caveats to that. So some insurance companies will only cover it if there's some documented cognitive changes. Some will only cover it every year or so many months in between cognitive assessments. So while most insurance companies will cover it, and it is helpful to call your insurance company and just sort of ask if there are any parameters around that.
So now someone's had that assessment done, presumably. Can mm-hmm. cognitive issues, cognitive challenges that are uncovered, can they be treated?
Yes, absolutely. So there's lots of studies going on now trying to improve cognition. And so if we find that really MS is the primary cause, and we've either addressed or ruled out other things that could be contributing to cognitive changes, the primary number one thing that helps people improve their cognition is cognitive rehabilitation. And so that's kind of like physical therapy for your brain. It's exercising the areas that are weak or utilizing the areas that are strong to compensate for the areas that are weaker. And so typically you can do this with somebody like a speech pathologist or an occupational therapist. And some neuropsychologists also do cognitive rehabilitation. There are also some cognitive rehabilitation programs that you can do at home. The one that I typically recommend to people is Brain HQ because it was originally developed by neuroscience researchers for the purpose of improving cognition in healthy aging adults. And they did a 10-year randomized control trial with it. And then it's been taken from there and applied to MS and some other places. And it's one of the only programs that I know of, at least from my experience, that can have an impact on processing speed. So there are some things that you can do from home, but I think of sort of cognitive rehabilitation as like, you know, you can work with a trainer. So if you're exercising, for example, working with a trainer might get you there the fastest. So that would be the equivalent of working with like a speech pathologist or an occupational therapist. You can do your exercises at home with, you know, YouTube videos or with an exercise app, and that might get you to where you want to be, but there it does take some self-motivation to get there. So it's kind of what works best for you.
You know, from my own personal observation, I've seen that sometimes it's difficult for a patient to know when to pull the trigger. Someone mm-hmm. may be listening to our conversation right now, and they know that they've experienced a few episodes where they couldn't remember something that they absolutely should have known, or they had difficulty concentrating, or maybe felt confused. What are the steps that they should take?
You know, I always tell people that I don't think it's ever too early to ask about cognitive symptoms or what can be done about it or even getting that screening done. There certainly are normal cognitive lapses that everybody experiences, but until you have some testing or some objective data, it's hard to know whether these are normal changes or these are things that are going on with MS. If nothing else, if you reached out to your neurologist or your primary care provider and got, you know, a screening and it came up normal, you now have a baseline that you can compare to. So if you continue to experience difficulties over time, they can now compare to how you were doing last month or last year. And so I don't think it's ever too early to kind of ask about it or to find out whether or not there's something more going on.
Dr. Megan Beyer, thank you for all that you do to improve the quality of life for people living with MS. And thanks for coming back to talk about an issue that's so important to so many people. It's always great to talk with you. I learn a lot, and I hope we get to do it again.
Absolutely. I'm so happy to be here, and thank you for inviting me back.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com /156. You'll find that link in today's show notes so you can easily copy and paste it right into your email or text. And before we close things out, I'd like to invite you to leave a rating and review for Real Talk MS by visiting realtalkms.com/review. When you get there, you'll see the options for where you can leave that rating and review. Just click on any one of them. It'll take you less than 2 minutes, and it would mean a lot to me. I don't think I have to tell anyone listening to this podcast that the COVID-19 pandemic has intensified and in some cases multiplied the challenges of living with MS. From having difficulty affording MS medications to adjusting to increased isolation to coping with the added uncertainty of wondering how you or your family might be personally affected by COVID-19. More than ever before, people living with MS need access to reliable information, support, and connection. We're witnessing that even during a pandemic, MS doesn't stop, and neither does the National MS Society. So they've established the National MS Society COVID-19 Response Fund to ensure that the Society can continue meeting the urgent and expanding needs of the MS community during these unprecedented times. During the pandemic, we've seen the MS Society create virtual programming and support groups literally on the fly so that no one has to face MS alone. They've created resources and provided information so that doctors and nurses can deliver the very best care. They've continued to amplify the voices of the MS movement to influence critical public policy decisions. And they've never stopped advancing research to find cures for MS. I know that these are financially tough times for a lot of people, but I'm asking that, as you're able, please make a donation to support the National MS Society. To donate, you can text the word GIVE to 68686, and you'll get a link right to the MS Society's COVID-19 Response Fund webpage. I hope you'll make that donation, and I hope you'll make that donation today. It's never been more important. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.